My name is Amy Spain Duncan. I am an alcoholic. Hey guys, my sobriety date is March 6th of 2010. My sponsor's here, but doesn't want to be pointed out in case I mess this up. Too bad. And you, I was so excited. She's like, "I'm coming to the conference." I said, "I'm so, oh wow." She said, "I'm coming to see Donnell." I said, "Okay." Yeah. We stay right-sized in this program one way or another, right? I have a home group that raised me. I love my home group. I could see and share and feel love there. And I was broken. And to find a place where I could see and feel and share love was incredible. So I think I'm a real tough girl. So earlier I was talking about how I'm going to go, you know, practice acts of intimidation and terroristic threatening to someone who's, I feel, has harmed my husband in some way. I'm a real gangster. And expressing this, you know, I'm going to take care of this problem, you know, and how irate I am that he would do that to this sweet man I'm married to. And so I think that, and then I'm sitting here in the chair, and they read the preamble, and I tear up. Because this is what's real. Where is our chairman, John? Congratulations, buddy, on 11 years. That is tremendous. 11's a tough year. Back in Louisville, we say that whatever year you're celebrating. just get them ready for the fight. You know, really get them excited. And I want to give a shout out to my friend Zoe, who just celebrated a year 2 weeks ago. Queen! Queen! And she fought for that, and she kept coming back. And there's the proof's in the pudding. So that's what we do here, and that's the real deal. That's why we're here. I am on fire for this thing because my life is on the line, and I'm not confused about that today. I suffered alcoholism a long time before I was willing to address my alcoholism. And my alcoholism bothered a lot of people before it bothered me. And if it bothered you, I just found new people to hang around with because it was a long time before it bothered me. I drank alcoholically from the beginning. I didn't have a honeymoon period or moderate drinking. That's not my story. They put that magic elixir in my hand. I intuitively knew to drink as much as I could, as fast as I could. And after that night, I chased that forever. You know, it solved all my problems. It solved problems I didn't know I had. And I quickly, it took prominence in my life. So we talk about the progression of the disease. And I remember, like, I played trombone. I ran track. I was in sports. I was an honor student. You know, I had, you know, a few things. I had potential, the other nasty word to us. Hated them. Like, get off my case. But you test it so high. Because we're above average intelligence. We're charismatic. We're good people. We have this kryptonite, you know? And it was my kryptonite. And quickly, you know, I didn't want to, things started that used to be hold my interest fell to the wayside. And alcohol was the focus. And I became a party girl pretty quick. I love a party. I grew up in a town with population 85, you know, so I didn't, you stand out. It's just, it's easy to stand out. You lose the blending effect of everybody knows you. And nobody wanted their kid hanging out with me. And if I dated your son, I'm sorry. You probably called my mother and asked that I not see your son. Cause I like boys. I'm a fast girl. I say I'm from Kentucky. We got bourbon, beautiful horses, and fast women. And that was me. And that's what I did. And I just constantly sought approval and validation. And I love, the first full paragraph of Bill's story, page 6, 2 bottles of gin and oblivion. And that was the goal. That was always the goal. I, you know, my dad used to talk about overshooting the mark. Man, I couldn't overshoot. The mark was over whatever your mark was. Mine was past that. 2 bottles of gin and oblivion. That's where I wanted to be all the time. it's hard to get alcohol when you're 12, so I would have to just really, you know, you waited for the opportunity and you got excited, and I obsessed about it, the mental obsession at 12, 13 years old. When will we get it? Who's going to buy it? How much will there be? Where can we drink it? And who do I have to share it with? That was always a concern. My mom put me in an all-girl Catholic high school by my freshman year in hopes of slowing me down. I got to that school, and those girls said, we don't drink, and we don't smoke, and we don't kiss boys. And I said, well, neither do I, which was a lie. But I'm the chameleon, and I can say I don't care, but I do. That's why I tell you these lies about me, so that you'll approve of me. It doesn't take long. The gig was up. We all went out. Finally, by sophomore year, I was just waiting for this. One of them says, we should drink. And I said, really? Really? And I said, well, what should we drink? And Bartles and James wine coolers had come out. And these sweet girls said, we could drink Bartles and James. I said, ooh. Risque. And they said, you know, but we don't know where to get it. I said, I can pull a few strings. Let me work on it, you know. And I'm drinking whiskey by this time, you know. I'm like, and they said, I said, how much do you girls think you want to drink? And they said, well, get us a pack. And they came forward to a pack. I knew that they just didn't know, so I got them a case. And anyway, that didn't go well that night. Nothing went well. And I got drunk, and they found out. They found out who I am. And that Monday in this all-girl Catholic high school, in honors classes, and a track star and a band member, I walked up to the lunchroom with my tray, and those girls looked at me and said, you can't sit here. And I went, screw you, you know. That's my answer to everything. When you don't let me, screw you. But my response to that was to leave that school. I left that day and I never went back. And I told my mom I got to change high schools. I ended up changing high schools 4 times. We never moved. My stepfather wasn't in the military. I have to leave, right? All the reasons one might change. No, no, no. I can't get along with you. I'm looking for a place where my unacceptable behavior will be acceptable. So I'm seeking sordid places all the time. I got to tell you, my dad divorced, my mom and dad divorced when I was 7, my biological father. And I was mad at my mom about that, and that was my first resentment. My dad's one of us. My dad got sober on my 18th birthday. That was his sobriety day. It was my 18th birthday. And by that point, I'm in my cup. Right. So my dad's hanging out with you guys. I thought that was great. I think old people should have somewhere to hang out with other old people. I thought you guys were like where you retired from drinking. Like, we retired and we talk about where we used to work or drink, but we've retired. And that's what I thought you guys did, and I thought that was great. It was good he retired. Things weren't going well for him. He should retire. And I'm off and running. I had my first baby at 19, and she deserved better. I'm a full-blown alcoholic at 19 years old. I'm a full-blown alcoholic because now I can get it every day. And every day I'm putting something in my body to feel different than I do, because being sober is grossly uncomfortable. I heard a guy say, I knew I was an alcoholic by how it felt sober. Most people don't feel that bad sober. It's like just us. I didn't know that. I thought everybody hated being sober, and I couldn't figure out why everybody didn't, you know, run to the shelter of Mother's Little Helper every day, because I needed to feel different than I did. And so there's a lot of men. My daughter was born to an alcoholic mom. She deserved better, but she got what she got. And today I try to be better. I try to be the mother she deserves. And we have a good relationship today because she's done a lot of work and I do a lot of work. But she was drugged through the madness. I failed. I did not give her what she deserved. I didn't give her safety. I didn't give her consistency. I didn't give her... I couldn't care more about her than me. That's crazy, right? I mean, I'm her mom. Aren't moms supposed to care more about their kids than themselves, but I don't. I tell you I do. And if you tell me I don't, we're going to fight. But my actions don't demonstrate that, because I do what I want to do when I want to do it. And I don't care who's around or what's going on. I'm quick to ditch that kid, take her to my mother's, drop her off, and I'm never on time to pick her up. That's the kind of mom I'm at. I started working at a bar. We should all work at bars. I love bars. I'm a barroom drinker. I like a fist fight. I don't mind if there's a knife involved. I want broken glass. I love chaos. Like, I'm that girl. If there's not a fight, I'll start one. And then just kind of sit back and watch, you know? Like, I love that stuff. I used to get so mad when people would try to break up fights. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Hit 'em! You know, I love it. The adrenaline, the insanity, it matched. I want the outside out here to match the noise and the chaos in this brain. It kind of leveled it out, and that's who I was. And I was a party girl, but I was a dangerous party girl, because when we started drinking, it's all fun and games till I stab you. And you don't know, and I don't know either. So I always say, thank God for men that love crazy women, or I'd have been single all the time. But there is a select group of you. Some of you are smart, and you're like, oh, my God, she's crazy, and you back away slowly. And there's the others that, like, there's a little sparkle in your eye, and you're like, she's crazy, you know? You're my guy, you know? And everybody wants a crazy girl till they're bleeding. Yeah. Then it's not as much fun for you. And I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't know what that was. Page 52 of our big book talks about the bedevilments. It talks about being prey to misery and depression. It talks about being in little control of my emotional nature, which means I go from everything's fine to I'm going to kill you in about 0.3. And in real or fancied, that's pretty unpredictable. That's pretty unpredictable, you know, and that's the drunk I am. I started dating the bouncer because I like to fight. He likes to fight. We used to fight each other quite a bit. On my fifth step in 2010, I had, you know, this abusive relationship. It was very violent, you know. And my sponsor looked at me and she said, didn't you say that you're violent when you drink? I said, oh, yeah, extremely. I'm a rager. I'm extremely violent. She said, do you think he was ever protecting himself? Maybe. Because you're going to have to defend yourself. I'm coming at you. You know, that's me. And I carry a knife. So they were mostly fair fights that I started, you know, if we're going to be honest about it. But I got pregnant again, and he didn't want a baby, and he took off. And I have to, this is a disclaimer. I am from Kentucky. I need you to listen closely. I started dating his brother, not my brother. It was his brother, okay? Folks back home want me to be very clear on that point. So that you don't get any, you know, well, we are in Georgia. You guys probably wouldn't care. it was his brother. But he didn't like his brother either. So we had that in common. And that we forged a 10-year marriage on that fact that neither one of us liked him. And we both didn't like his mom either. And she didn't like me, which I couldn't figure out at all. And again, I'm doing a fist step, and she's on my resentment. She ruined my marriage. You know how mother-in-laws are. And my sponsor said, you don't see where you set the ball in motion here. And I'm like, nope. I was very kind to her. I was always respectful in her home. She said, you nowhere do you see that you may have stepped on the toes of their fellows and that they retaliated. I said, I gave her beautiful children by all her sons. My poor spouse, she was like, what am I working with here? I was delusional. When I tell you, I brought you a mess, you know, I brought you guys a mess. Like, what are you going to do with this one? I'm twitching, you know, I'm nuts. bad. It was bad. So we could get married. Led Zeppelin filled the chapel. It was a lovely Wiccan-type wedding in a Methodist church. It was rock and roll. You know, that's who we were. And a year into that marriage, he said, I'm taking these little girls and I'm leaving you. Because I'm dangerously antisocial and I'll break the dishes in the kitchen, and I've got two little girls who are hiding in their bedroom closet while mom tears up the house. I always think about the line in the book that says an alcoholic in his cup is an unlovely creature. And when I picture that scene and my babies hiding in their closet and me busting the dishes in the kitchen and chasing him around, what an unlovely creature. He's going to leave for all the emotional appeal. I knew something was wrong with me. I heard Mari G in Nashville one time say, I always knew something was wrong with me because people always said, something's wrong with you. And I could relate to that. I was like, I've heard that. I've heard that a few times. And I was 25 years old and something was wrong, man. And I knew, I thought if I got married, everything would be okay. When I had these kids, everything would be okay. When I had a house, everything would be okay. If I had some cars in the driveway and I'd gone to nursing school and I was an LPN, and now I'll be okay. And all these things that were going to make it okay. And I'm 25 years old and I've got all those things and nothing's okay. And that's terrifying because that means that there's something wrong with me. So I called my dad. I said, Daddy, I think I got what you got. And my dad textbook 12-step me. And he brought me to you. And I liked you. I fell in love with you because I could see and share and feel the love immediately. I was never one of those people who didn't like meetings or didn't like AA. I came in and you're funny. You smell good. There's food. I like all those things. There's usually cake or cookies. I like that. I could get along with you. You have dark, sick senses of humor. I love that. You know, I loved AA. And so I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I quit drinking. What I didn't do was I worked one side, sometimes two, of a three-sided triangle. And I had what we call fellowship sobriety. And that meant I hang out with you and I didn't drink. I hung out with you and I didn't drink. But it got better, and me and him had two more kids because, you know, I'm back in the big bed, as the boys say, right? And things are good, and we have two more kids, and I got sober to be a mom, and I need to be home with him and those kids. And he says things like, it's just like when you were drinking, you're still never home. Because I'm not considerate of him and the kids. As soon as his wheels touch the driveway, I'm out the door because I go to meetings early. Helps that up. And then I stay at the meeting, and then I go to the meeting after the meeting, and I don't think about him at home with four kids trying to give them dinner, give them baths, do some homework, and go to bed, because I am inconsiderate. And I hide behind what you tell me to be rude at home, to be thoughtless at home, to be inconsiderate to the people. The book says the home is sometimes the hardest place. Being with you was easy. Being with him was hard. So I avoided that, and I stayed with you. And he started to grumble, as he should. And instead of cutting down the time and being considerate and mindful, I said, fine, I just won't go. That's what alcoholics are. Fine. My big drama-filled life. Oh, that's what you want. And then, of course, so if I've got a fellowship-based sobriety and I'm not hanging out with the fellowship, I'm hit, as I'm not treating my disease on any level. I underestimate it. I underestimated the opponent. I wasn't properly armed with the facts about this disease, the progressive fatal nature, the mental obsession, and the physical allergy. I didn't know that on page 31 you had already told me what I was getting ready to do. Go to a whoopee party, not go to a whoopee party. Take a vacation, don't take a vacation. Brown liquor, white, that's what I'm getting ready to do. There's another part of our book that says the alcoholic, right? We got amnesia. I can't bring with sufficient force to my conscious mind the pain or misery of a week or a month ago. I've forgotten what it was like. 3 short years ago. And my other favorite part of the book tells me that I will reach out and touch a hot stove and tell you, watch this, I won't get burnt, and here's how. And that's what I did. That's what I did. But it started out slowly. I'd kind of picked up that I shouldn't drink. Drinking's bad. But I'd grown closer to God in the fellowship. And God made weed, and I like God. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to smoke weed, and I'm going to be rocketed to the fourth dimension. Of course, I can't tell you. AAs are pretty close-minded about that stuff. So I'm going to keep it a secret. And this is what I'm going to do. The only problem is when I smoke weed, I get thirsty. And the water just wasn't cutting it. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to drink beer, but I'm only going to drink at home. And I only drink the good beer, not the cheap beer. That makes me crazy. I'll drink the expensive beer. We're only going to drink on Fridays and sometimes on Saturdays, unless there's a football game on Sunday. See where this is going? I won't drink hard liquor, but they do have Taco Tuesday with 99-cent margaritas. I won't go to the bar except that one band is playing, right? I'm in full-blown addiction. I'm back in it. I'm drinking every day. I'm drinking in the morning. I'm drinking at night. I'm drinking. And it's doing what it does, and we're fighting again, and the kids are older now, and instead of hiding in the closets, they just leave and go outside, and it gets insane, and he divorces me, and he should have, and I left, and when he divorced me when he said 10 years into that marriage, I'm leaving you, this time something had happened up here. The first time I thought, oh God, no, what do I need to do? But by this time, the disease had me in such grips that my response to that was good. Good. I need you've been the problem the whole time, you know. It's always them. Them, those, and they's. I'm a blamer. You're the reason. And after that, things got real dark real fast. There was no safety net. So sometimes our families provide a safety net for us, and it doesn't look like it's that bad because you're married and you have the kids and somebody's working sometimes, and every now and then some bills get paid. And so it looks okay. But now we're separated, and I can't hold a job. I can't show up and go to a job. I became a wino during this period. I don't know how winos do it any length of time. My thought pattern was this. Divorcees drink wine. I'm a divorcee. I will drink wine. This is very sophisticated. Alcoholics don't drink Zinfandel with corks, right? So I got a bottle and a cork and 2 glasses in case you came over. You did not. But I would open up that bottle of wine and I would drink it, and I became a couch sleeper. But the sugar in the wine, my God, the hangovers on that were unbearable. So you can't work well. And I lost my job because I don't show up on time, and I can't get there, and I'm hungover. And I'm going to get a job. And I love that line. You know, Bill talks about none of us knew this was going to be my last honest work. I didn't know that when I got fired from that job I had held for 5 years, that was the last honest work I was going to do. Nobody knew that. But I'm into alcoholism. So I end up living in my car. A speaker in Nashville said alcoholics are the only people who are like, where do you stay? Oh, I live in my car. Great. Can I stay with you a few days? Because we're not really homeless if you live in your car. And I tell my kids are into, you see everybody's into that now, living in their van. I'm like, I did that when it wasn't cool. Like, that wasn't on TikTok, and I was doing that well. But then they towed my car. Bad day. Everything I owned, I was like, well, this is unfortunate. And now I'm on foot. And you don't get very far on foot, and another weird thing's happening. I'm 37 years old, and if I don't have a drink in the morning, my hands start to shake. And I remember the first time it happened. I remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly what I was doing. I remember looking up at the clock, and it was 10:04 a.m., and my hands were shaking uncontrollably at my side. And I was 37 years old. What is this? And I intuitively knew I needed a drink. I knew it would stop it. And I remember thinking back to when I'd hung out with you guys, and the drunks would come in, and the old-timers would give them half a cup of coffee so they wouldn't spill it on the guy next to them. You guys remember that? When we had the shaken drunks in our meetings? And I remember the crushing truth that that was me. At 37 years old, I didn't know that alcoholism affected women at a faster rate. I thought, I'm way too young for this. What do you mean? And I went down to the nearest bar, and I pulled out $2, and I grabbed that beer with two hands, and I poured it down my... I was a kid with potential. I was smart. I was funny. I was attractive. I was fast on the track. People thought I was going to do things and be somebody. And I'm homeless on foot, shaking for a drink at 37. Estranged from my family. It got where they said, maybe it's best if you don't come around. Because I upset my children when I came around. Because I would yell and fight with my mom and my ex. I was always fighting somebody. I stayed out on the streets for 4 years. I was 39 years old. Oh, I want to say, when we talk about the love, from 2007 to 2010, I bounced in and out of here. And you clapped every time I got a white chip. If it was my third one that day, you said, we're glad you're here, Amy. Keep coming back. And if you hadn't, you would have a different speaker. So thank you. Thank you for the people that welcome the girl in who's shaking and dirty and twitching a little bit, kind of scared of her. But you say, come sit here. Did you eat today, Amy? We're glad you're here and keep coming back. That's the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the hook, the love. Because everywhere else I'm rejected. Everywhere else I'm not welcome. But here with you, there's warmth and hospitality. There's love and tolerance and patience, and I can get that nowhere else in this world. And I'm at my worst. I'm broken, badly mangled, beaten into a state of reasonableness. March the 6th, 2010, my dad pulled up on me at on a street corner. My dad had 20 years of sobriety at that time. He'd just celebrated 20 years a few weeks before. And he picked me up on a street corner, and he said, Amy, I'd like you to go to detox. There's a homeless shelter, and you can go there. And I think you should go and let those women help you, honey, because you're going to die. And I don't know what happened that day. Something happened. Something happened. And I said, okay. Something happened. I don't say, okay, I'll go to detox. I'd been to that detox twice before. I thought it was for people really bad off. Our egos. This is for very unfortunate people, different than me. Different than me. It's like they said you can't have a phone, you can't have a car, you can't have a job. It's a 6 to 9 month program. I said, oh, that won't do. I didn't have a car, I didn't have a phone, I didn't have a job. This won't do. Because my disease tricks me, and it tells me that you're going to get those things, honey, and it won't take you 6 to 9 months. Come Monday, we're going to get it together. Don't go into the, you know. But something happened that day. Something happened. I was down in Florida, and a lady said, your sobriety date is the day that grace and desperation collided. And I love that. I thought, man. Because grace is always there, but I don't always have the gift of desperation. And some reason that day I did, and I got in my daddy's car, and he drove me to that detox. And I went in, and I wrote a note on a piece of paper that said, this is a good idea. And I carried that note for about 8 months. Because you will change your mind. If you're new here, remember, this is a good idea. You know? And I went through that program, and it was a tough program, one of the toughest in the world. You know, there's consequences. We have a community. You sit around, and the women tell you what they, I wear my defects on my back. I can't see them. And so the women will raise their hand. I have a concern on Amy. some 24-year-old. She intimidated me in the kitchen. You know. Takes a lot of humility. And we would write words. You had to write pages, you know, to be early is to be on time. And why? What's different this time? They would give you like little. It was a whole deal, you know. But the best thing they did was they put that book in my hand. And I remember opening that book and reading, "There is a solution." And tears dropped from my face onto those pages. That book moved that long distance from here to here, and I understood. I understood. You know, I read Bill's story, and I'm like, Walter, who's Walter Hagen? Like, I don't even know who that is. I think they sell his shorts at, you know, Bass Pro. I don't know who this is. You know, and my sponsor took me to, she told me early on, we're looking for the similarities, and she said, forget Walter Hagen. You know, the guilt, horror, and remorse of the next morning are unforgettable. So do you know what that means? Yeah, I know that one. She said, Bill's looking at people jumping off the towers of high finance and thinking, that's crazy. And then on page 6, he's saying, should I kill myself? And not long after that, he's dragging his mattress from the second floor lest he jump. That's the progression of this disease. Stealing from my wife's small purse, you know, not working again, all these things. I had a sponsor because when I read it, I didn't know how to read it, but having someone to show me what Bill's saying, what that means, pulling out that piece and handing it to me and letting me digest it and it become part of me. This explains things for which we have no other reason, right? Why else would a mother terrorize her children? Why would a wife cheat on her husband? Why would I steal from my family? Why would I lose my job? Why would I not make it to important events and engagements? Why would I constantly build up their dreams and hopes to pull the structure on my head with them standing there? I understood the disease concept. I had a diagnosis. I like to shoot guns. Don't be scared. I didn't bring any. And I'm pretty good at it. And I felt like when they identified alcoholism, they gave me a target. And until then, I was shooting bullets in the dark. But they said, this is what's wrong with you. It's not him. It's not her. It's not them. It's not your dad. It's not your mom. It's not the Catholic Church. It's not those kids. This is what's wrong with you. And this is how we combat that. And they gave me a set of instructions. Some simple suggestions. You had given me the answers that I had been seeking, right? And I got busy and I go foot to pavement and Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always have. Bob says, with one half the zeal, I was a zealot. If you got between me and what I needed on those streets, you were in a bad spot. And I brought that same energy into Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a lot of fun. I'd be sitting at a meeting. You know how they go, don't, if you have to talk, take it outside. The person next to you might want to live. That's me. I want to live. So if we were in a meeting and you were talking next to me, I'm plotting your demise. I'm going to report you to the AA police. You're not following the rules. People want to live. Why are you talking? I no longer hear the meeting because I'm figuring out how I'm going to approach you in the parking lot after the meeting to explain to you why we don't talk during meetings. That's a true story. And at the end of that meeting, I got up and I'm holding hands with a dear lady, Kathy. Kathy had 17 years sober at the time. I said, Kathy, what do? When you're in a meeting and people are talking, she said, move. I remember thinking these AAs are smart. They are smart. That never, you know, like we don't know what we don't know. That had never occurred to me that I could move. No, I'm just going to sit here mad. And I would beat women up with the big book. Do you want to live or you want to die? What is your choice to be? Book tells me on to the next one. You know, I was like, I don't sugarcoat this stuff. I care more about your life than your feelings, you know. That was me. I was like Hulk Hogan of AA. My home group would tell newcomers, like they would say, can you sponsor me? And Tim Hyland would be behind them like. I wanted to be helpful. They coined the phrase that I would 12 stomp women. I didn't have a good 12-step program, but I'll 12-stomp you. I'm going to beat you into sobriety. We're getting sober, you know. One little girl went to have, I told her she had, you know, you've got to pray, get on your knees in the morning, get on your, you know, the same information you gave me, and she wants to talk about theology, which confused me. And I don't care at all what you think. What you got to do, though, is get on your knees in the morning and get on your knees at night. And she was like, oh, no, you don't understand my God and this and my grandma. I said, I don't care. Get on your knees and then, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. I don't think I can do that. Finally, I looked at her and was like, look, I don't care. The only reason I'm doing this is they told me I had to, so I don't drink. Get on your knees in the morning, get on your knees at night. You know, like, not arguing with you. Like, it was bad. I remember looking in the book and it says love and tolerance is our code. And I literally looked at the woman next to me. I said, I'm screwed. It's their code, you know. But you put up with me and you loved me and you let me twitch around here. And I was telling Matt that I would sometimes get the Sunday morning spot, but I cussed so much they finally were like, let's move her. Put her Sunday morning. Because I cussed and I was crass. I mean, I was rough, real rough around the edges, you know, and that's what drinking and street life will do to you. I went back to school. I got a bachelor's degree in nursing and I started working at our local hospital and I smile a lot. And people say, you smile all the time. And I say, if you only knew. I'm just tickled to death that this is happening. I can't believe it. You know, and I get all these fun and wonderful things in my life that I get to do, a wretch like me. 5 years sober, I kicked in my neighbor's door and threatened to kill everyone in the house, and I meant it. I called my sponsor afterwards. And she said, you're going to jail. That's terroristic threatening. I said, no, I think they're too scared to call the police. I'm real scary, you know. And I said to her, I said, when am I going to stop doing this? When am I going to stop raging out and lose, you know, when am I going to stop doing this? She said, honey, when you work all the steps. And I thought, oh, I take women through this. So what do you mean I'm 5 years sober? Basically an old timer. What do you mean? You know. We're on fire, man, at 3 to 5 to 7. And she said the second half of 11. Bill Cleveland talks about being forced, pushed into steps. And at 5 years sober, I was forced into step 11. I was real good at prayer, and I avoided meditation. I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't comfortable with it. And I tried it once, and nothing magic happened, so I never did it again. And my sponsor took me to the 12 and 12, which she didn't often do, but she said, I want you to go in there and read step 11. And every reason I avoided step 11 meditation was, once again, in our literature, they know us. They know me. So I began to practice meditation. I'm never going to be good at it. Here's a secret. No one is. There is no one that's good at it. You're not going to get good at it. You're going to practice it. And every now and then, you're going to be like, ooh, that was pretty cool. But most of the time, I sit there, and Beth says that when I wake up, the committee goes, thank God you're up. We need to talk. You know, that's my head most of the time. But I practice it. And when I do that, I think of the prayer by Thomas Merleau where he says, and I'm going to misquote it, but he talks about, I don't know what I'm doing, man. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know how this is going to turn out. But I think the desire to please you pleases you. And that's my God. He knows I'm goofy. He knows I'm a little bit corny and twitchy and my brain races. But the desire to please pleases. And so I practice meditation, and I've gotten a lot nicer in meditation. I am connected to something bigger than me. I am connected to you. And if I am connected to you, I am less likely to hit you in the face. That is a good thing for people. That's a good thing. It's a good thing. 10 years sober, I put my hands on a sponsee. Fast walked her out of my house. Angry. Rage, justified anger, 10 years sober. Where'd this come from? My daddy had died, and I don't know how to process grief. You know, I don't know what to do with that, and I need help. You know, I didn't drink, and that girl, she didn't drink either. But there are things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, please do not set the bar so high. Like, they didn't kick me out. I said, I don't know. Are that, you know, could you get kicked out if you put your hands on a sponsee? My dad said he was driving one to detox and he wouldn't. He kept trying to grab the steering wheel while dad was driving. And so dad finally said, quit it. And he did like that and bloodied his nose. And the sponsee's like, you hit me. Dad's like, get out of my car. You know, it's not always great. I'm messy, and I struggle with rage and justified anger and grief, and I got to learn to do this. I've never lost my dad before. I've never been 13 years sober before. I've never, done this. I'm brand new to this, right? I'm brand new to 52, and it's hot. Woman of a certain age, this is new. I didn't always do this, you know? I went to college. I didn't know how to do that. I buried my daddy. I didn't know how to do that. My mom has terminal illness, and this is a woman I didn't get along with, and I'm her daughter because you all taught me how to do that. I've never done that before. You know, trust God, clean house, and help others. I don't drink today, and I am better than the woman that walked in here on March 6, 2010. That's the deal. I don't drink. I make mistakes. I promptly admit when I'm wrong, mostly. I make amends when necessary. I practice prayer and meditation. I try to practice these principles in all my affairs and carry this message and help the newcomer. I still go foot to pavement in this deal. I used to do it because I was scared if I didn't, I would drink and I would die. And now it's not a fear-based recovery. I do it because I enjoy it and I love to watch the miracles and I love to watch Zoe celebrate a year and Karen come back and go on cruises with her sons. I love the show. We have a front row seats to miracles and I'm here for the show. And I want to see it and I want to be part of it, whatever that looks like. And I love that you accept me in my totality. The warts, the happy, the sad, the broken, you are no different than me. I am you and you are me. And we walk this road together, not taking a drink one day at a time. That's a pretty cool deal, man. They ain't offering that anywhere else, you know. Life is good today. I have a good relationship with my children and my grandchildren. It's kind of rocky with my son, but I'm learning how to do that. Whatever's going on, it seems silly. Trust God, clean house, and help someone. How is that going to help the big, big problems I have? And I just thought the old-timers weren't listening. And I'd say it again because they're old and they can't hear. And you don't understand. It's my big problem. I say, yeah, we know. Trust God, clean house, and help. You don't understand. I got this big, big problem. They say, yeah, go put those chairs away down there. And that girl needs a ride home. And I'd be like, they're not listening to me. I'll go put the chairs away, get in the car. They said, I got to take you home. You know, go home, do it. And I do the things. I do all the things, and I get all the results, and it's always wonderful. and it always works out. We were talking today on the way here about the 5% in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's magic here. There's a fourth dimension. There's a portal to a world of spirit to stand in the sunlight, right? This universal source, power God. It's hidden, and the door is marked inconvenient. And that's why most of us don't find it. I hope you're at the detox center. I hope you're taking an H&I. I hope you pick up the girl that's still kind of twitching, and she might hit you. I hope you're, I hope you're reading the book. I hope you're setting up the chairs. Thank you to the committee that did all of this and put all this together. I hope you're in service. I hope you're operating on all three sides of that triangle. And I hope you will go through the door marked inconvenient.